Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I bring to you news. I don't bring it to you. The Animals brought it to you already. Another Penyenka, Andrew.
No.
Another bad one. The USL final. You saw it, I'm presuming.
Yeah, it was. It was disgraceful. It is the standard as to why I am against this sort of thing.
Right.
Hugely embarrassing and wholly unnecessary.
The fact that Phoenix Rising recovered from it and beat Charleston Battery on penalties. 3-2, mind you, on penalties.
Yeah.
That doesn't sway it, that they got away with it.
No, well, that has nothing to do with it. That has nothing. It was a Penenka. And it was so poor. I believe the comment that I saw from somebody on Twitter was something to the effect of my 4-year-old could have caught it. Like it was like, I don't know. It
had nothing on it. If the keeper had never touched it, it would have bounced 3 or 4 times before it hit the line.
No, it's ridiculous.
It's pathetic.
Yeah. And you know, when I saw those tweets, I was thinking, I wonder if I have enough soccer beliefs that I could create my own like soccer 10 commandments. And I'm trying to think if I have enough to put together right now. I think I only have 2. So I have a ways to go. I might have more than that. Definitely no Penenkas, definitely in swingers only. I've got to think of my other, I know I have other ones. I'm going to try to work with this.
As I'm listening to American Fiasco, you can leave. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. You can actually, thou shalt not covet thy teammate's wife. You can actually leave that one in.
That's a good
point.
As
it applies to U.S. soccer.
You know, I got to tell you, JJ, you were so strong in your recommendation of American Fiasco. I don't know how I missed it when it came out.
2018, where were we? And we were deep in the weeds.
I don't know. I don't know what happened there, but I missed it. And your recommendation was so strong. And the subject matter is one that is so fascinating to me and so absurdly up my alley. I'm mowing through it. I'm on the 4th one. I was doing stuff around the house and mowed through half the series. I love it.
I'm going to
don't spoil anything. I mean, obviously I know most of this as it is stuff that happened and stuff that I'm aware of, but I still want to relive it.
Right. And I am going to hold off on certain things. Yeah, I just think that there was a remarkable decision. There were many remarkable decisions by U.S. manager Steve Sampson.
Okay.
And one of them is so, like, it's so crazy that I've been wrapping my head around it. And it could only be an American coach at that time. I'm not slagging off. Jesse Marsh wouldn't do it now. Bruce Arena would never do it now. Bruce Arena wouldn't do anything now. But I mean, like a young coach now, Berhalter wouldn't dream of it. And it's
an American. I'm trying to guess what that could be. A decision made by an American coach at that time.
And it feeds into our insecurities as a soccer nation, feeds right into them. Manifesting them in a team selection decision.
Oh, I can't wait to get to this. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, as I was listening to it, JJ, because I know Steve Sampson comes under, obviously, a lot of criticism for the way things went. But I'm up to the point now in the series where that criticism is starting. You're starting to see. But I'll say this on behalf of the U.S. Soccer Federation. Maybe it was controversial that he got the interim tag in the first place. But the things that happened while he was interim, like, you can see why he did get the job.
Sure. But there's also... I know I don't want to ruin it for
okay.
you.
Actually, yeah, let's move on. There's so much to get to. We don't need to do this.
Yeah, come on.
Most of our audience is probably like, why are we listening to this?
And why is JJ suddenly carrying water for a man in a jacket? What am I doing?
But just the fact that we're breaking this thing down that existed 5 years ago, like
there was an absolutely mental game at Stamford Bridge. Crazy, and also had wonderful rain pitch effects by the end, so you knew you were watching in England. A real atmosphere in that one. Amazing. Yeah. At Tottenham, Andrew, I'm just snatching defeat from the jaws of victory laid on against Gary O'Neill's Wolves, who are just, I mean, let's give them credit. They're really, really fighting hard for their manager. And then we've got, you know, United, Everton. We've got were Eddie Howe. might be in a bit of bother there at Newcastle. Amazingly, all of a sudden. We've got the NWSL final, which was another crazy game. A little bit of MLS. You know, our usual just chat and banter. Why are we talking about the 98 U.S. Men's National Team World Cup squad? What am I doing to hold this podcast up? Andrew, bring us back on course. Guide us like the aforementioned Moses. Guide us through the desert. We are your people. Take us through the sea of my blather.
JJ, we have a leader in the clubhouse for this season's devundling for match of the season, and I don't know if this one's going to get passed. I know it's relatively early. It's mid-November, and there are games of greater importance that are likely still to come. But when you get a 4-4, where, what's the stat on this? That the lead changed hands four different times, I think is the stat. Like, I think it's only the fifth time I was reading that that's happened in the Premier League. You've had other 4-4s, but not one where it was as seesaw of a matchup as what this one was. It's the leader for devundling for match of the season. It's set a very high bar. I don't know if it's going to be easy for this one to get past. Such an evenly matched game, virtually the same XG for both teams, right around 3, virtually the same shot number. Shots on target were pretty much the same. Even possession, which City usually dominate, wasn't that far off. It was like 55-45. It was just such a fantastic game where there were so many times where you thought, okay, well, I think Chelsea have got this now. And then there were times where you thought, okay, I think City are good now. And just you were thrown for a loop each and every time you thought that. It was fantastic drama. Enjoyed the hell out of this one.
Yeah, no, it was a great one. And thankfully, it was a great one that was not dogged down in too much VAR conversation. I mean, there's always a little bit. And there certainly was on the Haaland penalty. But the game wasn't overwhelmed. It reminded me of games of yore. And I know it's a cliche and it's a huge cliche, a great advertisement for the Premier League. And Pep did say that. But it kind of was a great advertisement for English football. Like when you think of English football, a heavy field, wet, mistakes, great goals, lots of action, crunching tackles. Like Raheem Sterling. Oh my God. Sterling on Foden. Jesus. Like he halved him. There was all those elements. Marauding fullbacks. Reece James. Just like drama, impudent young children scoring goals against their former clubs, even though they're not, you know, they're not old enough to have former clubs in my mind. Brilliant game. Really, really great game. And I think you'll have a manager, Guardiola, who will be just infuriated by much of what he saw. And it'll be interesting. I mean, I can only imagine training. How intense training is going to be. The next, like, forever, whoever's first back for training or whoever gets back in from international duty or whoever doesn't go away. Oh, it's going to be. You see that film? Is it called The Holdovers? Paul Giamatti?
Not familiar. I'm not saying you're wrong, just not familiar.
No. It's coming out, and I'm butchering the name of it. But it's kids who are in a private school, and there's always some who don't go home for Christmas. They're not. Their families won't have them home, so the teachers have to stay. That are the residents at this private school and look after them. And it looks like a kind of a dark comedy, and it looks very funny. We've seen the trailer a couple of times, and it just seems miserable for the kids and miserable for the coaches. That's what it's going to be like. If you're there for the next 2 weeks under Guardiola, because he's just going to be so annoyed. And on the Chelsea side of things, I feel like there's something there to galvanize them. That as much of a ding-dong as the Tottenham-Chelsea game was, I mean, for a team that's been crap all season, Chelsea have been involved in two pretty special games. But I think this game, they can take something from this. This team is beginning to solidify into something. And they looked good at times. Now they're still not a billion-dollar team, but it was beginning to come together a bit for them, I felt, in that game. And so yeah, it's you're always on about in a draw. Is there still a winner and a loser? I think both teams have. I think Chelsea are the winner in it. Actually,
I think so too. I think so too. Just by the fact that, you know, what you said there is true. That there's something for them that they can take from this. Certainly after the draw. That was the theme even when they appeared to be on the verge of losing. I mean, all throughout the broadcast, I think it was Graham Lasso who was continuously saying, you know, it's interesting that even if Chelsea come out of this with 0 points, there's probably more that they can take from this than they could from their 4-1 win against Spurs.
That's exactly what I said. And I'm not a Chelsea old boy saying this. And Lasso definitely is. That's just what you can... it's like why all those people were calling for us to, you know, be... over the top in our praise for Chelsea in that Tottenham game. That was such a weird game. It was hard. And I'm sure Pochettino didn't take that much from it. But he can take a lot from this. And at the end of the game, he was kind of, you know, he had his chest stuck out. He was roaring at the referee.
He was red hot. Yeah, he apologized afterwards.
But I think, I don't think that was pure anger or frustration. I think that was kind of red hot, in some ways, joy. Like, he can't be upset with what he saw.
Well, I wonder if he maybe still had some adrenaline pumping at that point. It was such an emotional game.
Well, I think he was
shouting
for he wanted more time. He said, "Why don't we play on?" Like that, the ref should have given more time to the game. That there was minutes to be left. But I think that's what he was upset about.
Really?
I can't be sure.
That's almost impossible to fathom. Somebody calling for more stoppage time in this current era of the Premier League.
He seemed
are
like
we not
he got,
getting enough.
Well, no, Poch was going, "Why don't we play? Why don't we play?" He was like that. So what else could he have meant?
I don't know. I can't answer that. Yeah, I would agree with you. I think if we had to pull a winner from this, I suppose I would make mine Chelsea, just for the fact that getting a point against City is an accomplishment in of itself, and they were also losing in stoppage time. You know, so anytime you're able to kind of grab something as an underdog late in a game like that, I think that they will be the ones feeling better about this. Just to go through some of the goals, because Lord knows there were a lot of them, 8 in total. You mentioned before that this was a nice game because it was two high profile teams. It was the matchup of the weekend, and there wasn't, for one of the first times this season in one of these high profile games, it didn't feel like there was a lot of controversy. Now, initially, maybe there was on the first goal, the penalty for Haaland. In real time, Cucurella taking him down in the box, I didn't think much of it. When I saw the replay, I can see why it was given. Maybe this is one of those things where people will say to me, it's never a penalty and you're just seeing it slowed down and it's deceiving because of that. Maybe that's true. But I was okay with them making the decision to overturn on the field and give this one.
I
wrapped his arm around him and kind of took him down. I mean, that's
for me, I think you just look at that one, you say, Haaland fouls him first. Haaland has a hold of Cucurella, then Cucurella pulls him back. So you have a choice there. I think you say 50-50, play on. You don't give anything. That's what I would do. But I mean, but it wasn't, like, I think it was Adam Crafton tweeted, it wasn't a decision that should cause outrage or upset that it was given. Like,
yeah,
it's, again, I don't think, I tried to make this argument on Reddit with one of the animals. Because it's not a sport that lends itself to these. There are situations just like that one which do not have the clarity of purpose to make a clarity of what you're seeing. It isn't abundantly obvious what the call should be. There's lots of those in soccer. There's lots of these gray areas, and it's very hard to officiate for them. So I literally can see either way with that one.
Yeah, I think I was generally okay with it because, and I think they pointed this out during the game too, you know, like they were kind of jostling for position, but then Haaland beats him. And like once that's happened and then Cucurella is trying to work his way back into it by grabbing him, like I'm okay with the benefit being given to the attacker there who has now beaten his man. I'm okay with that. But like I said, I can see it both ways. Didn't feel like a hugely controversial moment to me. Maybe Chelsea fans would disagree. It maybe is a tribal moment. But Haaland then converts the penalty. It's 1-0. And then just a short while later, what was it? Only 4 minutes later, Thiago Silva off of a corner kick gets a goal to bring Chelsea back into this one level 1-1. The oldest player to score a goal in the Premier League since 2013, was it? They said on the broadcast. It's unbelievable.
39 is weird, right? I'm now trying to think, how old was Latan when he was at United? But I guess he was 36 or 37.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know how he got across and wasn't covered. It's a glancing header from that angle. It's a brilliant header that he could convert it and score it. I know the commentators were wondering about Ederson on that one because he's so far past the post. How's that going by you? I've Ederson concerns later on, which I shall hold for now.
Okay. And then Chelsea do then grab the lead a little bit after that. Raheem Sterling converted on a really nice move from Chelsea. And, you know, I thought Sterling again for me had another great game, scored a goal, caused a lot of mayhem, I thought, in City's defense. Not to go off on a tangent here, but in seeing this performance, some of his recent performances, boy, I'm kind of at a loss for words that he cannot get back into this England side under Gareth Southgate. And I see some of the players who are, and I don't mean for this to go down an England road, but if we're going to talk about Sterling here, I at least wanted to bring it up because I do feel like he's kind of been flying of late. And so Southgate was asked about it. He said the door is 100% open, not only for Raheem, but also for other players who aren't in this squad. We don't need to know about his quality, his personality. He's a crucial part of the journey we've been on. It's an area of the pitch where we have as much competition as anywhere. Bowen has started the season well. Anthony Gordon and Cole Palmer are doing well. It's a changing landscape there. We used to not have wingers. That's why we used wingbacks in Russia. We have a lot of depth in those areas now. That's what people need to understand. Maybe that's true. Sounds like he's looking for reasons to not include Sterling in this side and move on from him. And I don't quite understand that.
Well, Sterling was a player that started ahead of quite a few players for Sauke in the not so recent past. I think a Euro 2021. It's an opportunity. With England home and hosed, it is an opportunity for Southgate to see what he has. And those guys mentioned, actually, you know, they deserve a look. I wonder if he's, I don't know. Maybe he is ready to move on, Andrew. Maybe he just looks at it and thinks that Sterling, you know, thanks very much and everything, but we have other options I want to see play. I don't know. I'm not sure Gareth in this case is lying. I actually think
I'm not saying he's a liar. No.
There
is depth there, but I still think Sterling is like, look, I know there's competition in those positions, but like, it's a little bit telling to me. What do we always say about Gareth Southgate in this era of England? He has his guys who have gotten him near the cusp of glory
for a while.
And that's what I thought. If Maguire and Henderson certainly are, I mean, Lord knows it seems like they've got spots for life on this team. Sterling isn't one of those guys. I don't know. Just seems a little bit interesting to me.
He may yet be.
I guess so. I guess we'll find out.
If he keeps playing like this, the clamor will be.
He'll have to go. Difficult. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Thoughts? So he scored his goal. I know sometimes we like to talk about this. His non-celebration. Was it a non-celebration?
No, he celebrated, then remembered himself, and then kind of did the calming thing. He was well into it.
But he was right in front of the away fans.
Yeah, no. I don't
think that was by accident.
No. And you felt it, the way he left City, there wasn't rancor with the fans or whatever, but there was a bit with Guardiola, definitely. And he gave it a kind of a, he gave it a yes, and then all right, calm down. So it was a well executed non-celebration.
And then afterwards with Sterling, this was so weird. I don't know if you saw this, JJ, but so he's doing his him and Cole Palmer were, I guess, selected to do the post-match interview with Sky Sports, with Patrick Davidson was the Sky Sports reporter. And so Sterling goes into the interview and he's rubbing his eye. There's something clearly up with his eye. And the interviewer, I think, is crossing boundaries that should not be crossed. And he immediately says, as Raheem Sterling, as he's rubbing at it, the interviewer, Patrick Davidson, says, Raheem, is there something in your eye? And he goes to reach for his eye as to like pull. He said, is that grass in your eye? And he's like, he's going to reach into his eye to pull it out. No, that's not for you to do. Like, that's, and Raheem Sterling immediately was like, he says to him, if you can find the video, it's pretty funny. He says back to him something like, no, you're going to put dirt in it. and then the guy backs off. But like,
wow.
Like I'm sorry, that's a boundary. That's a boundary there. Raheem Sterling in that moment doesn't need what is essentially a total stranger suddenly lunging for his eye. I would list the eye, JJ, if we're listing parts of the body that are just not for other people to be touching. We obviously know the obvious ones that
do we?
You know, we do. We know the obvious ones that are just strangers should not be touching those places. But the eye is next on the list for me. And this guy, it's totally inappropriate for him to be going in there to grab something from out of Raheem Sterling's eye. What's he thinking?
I don't know. Yeah, that is odd. That is really odd. You know, I'm celebrating 10 years in the United States on Thursday, and it's prompted me to go back through some of my photos on my phone. And I saw a picture. There's me and a topless Frank Lampard in the Red Bull Arena locker room, and I'm interviewing him, and he has ice on his shoulder. It's just like if I took the ice off his shoulder and started massaging his shoulder. It's not just like that, but it would be similarly inappropriate. I agree with you. Wow.
You don't go also, for another person's eye. You just don't, you touch that. Like, it's such a sensitive, it's such a sensitive area. I mean, what's he thinking? Yeah. Very weird. I'm sure his heart and intentions were in the right place. He wanted to help, as you could clearly see Sterling.
If there was grass,
irritated.
If there was a long stem of grass, okay, let's see. Let's work through this. Yeah. If there was a long stem of grass in his hair, right, trapped in his hair, and it's over his forehead, and he keeps rubbing his forehead, but he can't get it. Is it too intimate to just grab it and just pull it out of his hair?
Still weird.
Okay.
Still weird, but not nearly as bad as the eye.
What if you take it out and then you go, Raheem, make a wish. you blow it away.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a weird one.
What if, and it's the last one, I promise. What if there's a bit of dirt on his cheek, right?
Yeah.
A tiny little bit of dirt. And you just see it, and it's so obvious, it's going to be on camera and everything, and it just looks bad. Can you gently caress the side of his face?
I think no. You tell him, Raheem, we're about to go live. You got a little bit of dirt there. Oh, gotcha. Thanks. Gotcha. And that's it. Like, that's what you. That's all you do. Like, I don't understand this. Like, the interviewer reaching. It's just crossing boundaries. It's crossing boundaries.
The last one. What if he's bleeding from his butt cheek?
Okay.
What, like?
What are you even suggesting? That it's up to the interview. So it's not incumbent upon him or the team doctor. No. The interviewer will place the Band-Aid. I mean, this is so ridiculous.
It's too. They're weird. All
there's a boundary, and Patrick Davidson crossed it. Heart in the right place, wanted to help, but you don't reach for another person's eye. You just don't. If someone did that to me on the train, like if I was rubbing my eye and all of a sudden someone walked over, oh, I think you got grass there. Here, let me stick my finger in your eyeball.
Oh my God, you would jump out the window of the train. You would. I mean, that would be it. Or you inform the authorities. Nobody could. There isn't a scenario. Even if you were on fire, I know you. Don't deny it. If you were ablaze, spontaneous combustion, you would not welcome anyone getting close to you.
If I was on fire and somebody had water, I would welcome them dousing me and putting me out. But if I had something, but not the eye. I really believe that if we are power ranking the parts of the body that are untouchable for a stranger, the eye comes right after all the privates. I think that's
yeah.
Where it falls.
Okay. All right.
So Patrick Davidson, bad job. Where were we? So Raheem Sterling scores.
Yeah. Non-celebration, celebration, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. This one continues to seesaw. The first half was thrilling stuff. As Akanji then with a free header, just kind of finds an empty pocket in between the Chelsea defense.
That's so bad by Chelsea.
Terrible. Like,
it's just awful. And that's why I say, you know, they're not exactly a $1 billion team quite yet. That can't happen. And Pochettino, they swung for Pochettino's reaction. And I mean, if he could have picked up one of the substitutes and just smashed them into the dugout, he would have done it. Like, just out of sheer frustration.
He was furious, and understandably so. Especially because Chelsea played such a good half. I mean, they really played a strong first half, and you can't right as they're going into the locker room, it feels like, and it was all for nothing. Like, Chelsea have now equalized, and we're back to square one here going into the second half. Chelsea had no advantage going into the second half. All that hard work that they had done, it felt like they threw it all away in that one moment. But it was a great header from Akanji. Props to him. We go to the second half, and right away, bang, Haaland putting City right back in front as he kind of butts one over the line. It's a very, very interesting goal. We've seen some weird ones. Like, you know, I always think of Clint Dempsey against Portugal when he sort of like humped one into the net. Yeah. This one, Sterling just like, or Haaland, he kind of like his ass sort of just rode it in.
No, he arsed it into the net. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the grass, and his rather large Scandinavian derriere brought it across the line. It was more like a kind of a try in rugby than it was a goal.
This was a great goal from beginning to end. I mean, I really thought that this was just a well-crafted, like, City are great because they can beat you in a lot of different ways. You know, they possess the ball. They find openings, and, you know, they do their tiki-taka thing and all that. But, you know, then they have blasts. Like, we'll get to Rodri and his winner. You know, they can fire one from 20
beginning
yards
to rear
out.
End.
But this one, you know, this was a counter-attacking, like, Foden from the back with a great ball. It opens up in the middle. They counter a nice ball played into Haaland, who rides it in over the line. I thought it was just a nice counter-attacking move from Manchester City. Enjoyed it.
No, it was very good.
I will say, we talk about VAR sometimes. Now, this was a situation where I actually shouted at the TV, "Oh, stop. Oh, stop." This was one where you talk about looking for a reason to deny a goal. I mean, this was the peak of if they had not allowed this, and in the end they got to the right decision, it of course should have been allowed, but they're looking for a handball. And so when that was what they said on the broadcast, I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, did he? I thought he asked it over the line, but maybe his hand helped it. And then when they show it, no, you can see that that's not the handball they were looking for. They were looking to see that if While Haaland is in the goal and the ball is about to cross the line, if his elbow may have accidentally touched it while he's already in the net and the ball is about to cross. I mean, like, you talk about searching for things. This is the stuff that I don't think. Yeah, I saw one of the animals mentioned this about there was a big VAR debate going on the Reddit page. And I think one of the animals talked about how, you know, VAR seems to be operating and functioning just fine in MLS and the Bundesliga and other leagues around the world. It feels like the Premier League is the only one where they are looking for stuff like this. And I don't think that's going on. I don't think that that's getting looked at in other leagues the way that it was in this one, to see if his elbow touched it as the ball is crossing the line while he's in the goal.
I was watching the overlap with Gary Neville and Roy Keane and Ian Wright and Jill Scott. And there was they had a debate with the referee. Was it Mark Halsey, the former referee? And he said, when the Premier League introduced it, it was meant to be just for the howlers. Just for the Thierry Henry handball style stuff.
Right.
Just that. And it's metastasized into this thing. The thought of them reviewing that would bring me to a kind of a Browns, Bengals kind of place where we're trying to decipher whether a bit of the shin was down before the ball crossed the plane. That's the kind of thing. Now,
this why is do worse. We, I think this is, would have been worse.
This is worse because that matters in American football. If your knee is down, if your shin's down, if the lower
then
part of the
down,
leg
right.
is down, that's intrinsically a part of the game. This slight epidermis brush of the skin on the ball, stop it.
With no God's consequence sake. On the play whatsoever. Like, they're all going in the goal. Him, he's in the goal already. The ball is following him in. I mean, I don't know. Stuff like that is like, now we are really searching for reasons to deny goals. And I don't think that's really what anyone's looking for here. We want, like you said, we want the egregious ones ruled out. This would have been so ridiculous. But in the end, it's a moot point. It didn't touch his elbow. Goal stands. And then Chelsea, to their credit, they don't go away. They played, they fought hard. Nicholas Jackson, who's coming off the hat trick against Spurs, he gets the equalizer. And then... Late JJ is when the drama really started to unfold. Rodri, with another smash from outside the box, takes a massive deflection off Thiago Silva, helped it tremendously on its way into goal. But then Chelsea were still to be heard from as Cole Palmer, a penalty. Chelsea awarded a penalty. And
1,000% a penalty.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Ruben Diaz.
Broja. Broja did a great job of sort of trying to cut back. Diaz slid right into him. We've seen that a million times.
I don't know what Diaz was trying to do. Honestly. And it was his second kind of mad leg spasm in the game, because he just kind of on the Nicholas Jackson goal, where Ederson, I don't know why Ederson bashes that straight back out there, straight into the path of where a Chelsea attacker could be. Why it doesn't go to the side, I don't think it's particularly great goalkeeping from Conor Gallagher's shot. Whatever. Diaz then just ends up just sliding for no reason. Just ends up on his bum. I don't get that either. And
frantic defending. I mean, the whole sequence of events was taking place in a pretty threatening spot on the field, and he's just trying to do whatever he can to either delay a shot attempt or block what he thinks is going to be a shot. It was reckless, and it was a rightful penalty that was given, 100%. And then up steps Cole Palmer, who, of course, started the season with Manchester City, and he gets the final blow in this as he converts the penalty brilliantly in the 95th minute of stoppage time, and that is how we end 4-4. And I was thinking about Palmer in general, and what that moment meant for him. You know, there was a lot of talk in the lead up to this game about how good Cole Palmer has been and how he was a Manchester City player. He could still be with them, and they don't often lose these guys. But Palmer, as Pep talked about it before the match, he was asked about Palmer's decision to want to leave. Pep said, I said to him, Riyad Mahrez is leaving. You're going to get a chance here. He said, no, I'm not going to play here. I want to leave. So I said, okay, leave. And that was it. And they said goodbye.
I think it feels like a scenario where Hammer is and his team are aware enough that, hey,
Pep saying you're going to get a chance here, that is vague, very, very vague. And we've seen with players like Foden, we've seen with players like even Grealish now, your playing time is not guaranteed. You know, Pep, it's just not. And this is more like a kind of a Jadon Sancho. Remember when Sancho left City? The big thing was Sancho backed himself. He just, the offer from Dortmund came in and he said, if I go, I know I can play, I can do well. No, it was a perfect system set up for him in Dortmund as well. But Palmer's a weird one. He just seems, even the way he took that penalty, even the way he talks in like the post-match pressers, he seems so mature or kind of, I don't know, he's not afraid of the scenario he's in here. He doesn't play like a young player. And I think Pep said you're going to get a chance here, and he heard you'll have a chance. It wasn't firm enough, it wasn't definitive enough, and he decided to leave. And that decision looks right now really, really smart.
Yeah.
Now the money was huge, like crazy money. But yeah, Still seems like a smart decision.
Might be one that works out for everybody in the end. Although City would probably rather have him than not have him.
Well, considering the De Bruyne situation and how many fronts they're fighting on, it might have been good to have another player like that around. Yeah. But
they couldn't. And sure enough, he's the one who delivers the final blow in this classic 4-4 between these two. Just to close on this from this game, JJ, because you talked about it a little bit earlier, and I wanted to mention a little more on it, this idea that maybe we're starting to see it from Chelsea. Once we got past this idea that, you know, they're this billion-pound squad and all that, when the dust sort of settled from all the financials of this, we do, at least myself, I do sort of see that this was going to take more time than maybe whatever I initially thought. They mentioned on the broadcast that it's the third youngest average starting 11 so far this season Chelsea has in the league, which lends itself to this idea that it might take a little bit longer. And the thing that I wonder about with Chelsea, I wonder if you're starting to see some comparables between Poch's first season at Spurs and Poch's first season here at Chelsea, where when it's all said and done, they're both extremely young squads that he was working with that had a lot of promise. And when it's over, you may have to look beyond where they finish in the table or what the point total is to get a sense of the direction that they're headed. Because remember, I think that first season under Poch, I think Tottenham actually took a step back in terms of the table. I think they finished fifth the year before. The first season under Pochettino, I think they dropped back to sixth. But myself, no one that I knew who was a Spurs fan in that time came out of that season thinking that they had made a mistake or that things were going in the wrong direction. It was all positive. It's November 13th. There's a ton of season to go. Chelsea just beat Tottenham 4-1. They just tied Manchester City 4-4 in a wild game. I do wonder if you're starting to see some of those things where it's beginning to come together for Chelsea. And maybe once we get to March, April, we'll be viewing them in a far different lens than we did in these first couple months, regardless of what their place in the table may actually be.
Yeah, I think Reece James, who they're managing his minutes hugely, he's massive to that. Massive to that. If he can stay fit and stay involved. Palmer's been a revelation. If I honestly think Conor Gallagher has shown a lot, and he certainly did in that game, even though I don't think he would have been anyone's pick to be starting in for Chelsea this season. I think most Chelsea fans probably thought he would have been moved on at this point. Raheem Sterling as well. Jackson, if he can get his confidence together, which he should do after the last two games in the league. What's that?
Four goals in his last two games. It's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty great. I just, you know, Caicedo needs to be better. Mm-hmm. That's that much we know. The center of that defense, I mean, Thiago Silva, for all his experience and everything, you know, this is a serious, serious bit of a run-in for Chelsea to try and get into the top five. Modric was very good when he came on, I thought. I think what can't happen, and I think what might hamstring them is the kind of thing that Malo Gusto did when he blazed over
opened up. It's a great opportunity. You have to hit the target, and he blazes over the bar. That has to stop happening for Chelsea. They have to start hitting the target more regularly. Now, what am I saying? They just scored four goals in a... I understand that. But that hasn't been the trend earlier in the season. And, it, you know, eight goals in the last two games, brilliant. I'm not saying it needs to be continue at that pelt. But goal scoring has to be better. And it was the thing that hurt them against Brentford only 2 weeks ago. So trending in the right direction would be... There seems to be a bit more about them over the last couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah. Last note on this, Opta analyst did a breakdown basically asking the question of if Chelsea are, if we're now starting to see it, if we're seeing it come together for them. For however frustrating we feel like the season has been for them, mid-table, lots of starts and stops for them. In the, you can roll your eyes at this, but the expected points table, which is a gauge of how a team is performing sometimes, okay. They are fourth in that. Which tells you at least a little something that they've been maybe a little bit unlucky up to this point, and that if some of that begins to even itself out, they will start to move up the charts. So something to consider. Now, one of the teams, JJ, in that expected points table, who is far higher than where the expected points has them, that is Tottenham, and you can't help but wonder if that starts to even itself out. If Tottenham will begin to drop, and maybe we are seeing that. No one, JJ, no one is immune from the soul-crushing defeat. Tottenham, up to this point in the season, had been able to avoid it, but it catches up to everyone at some point. And I would say this was a soul-crusher, as Tottenham, with all the injuries that they have, took a lead into stoppage time and wound up losing this 2-1 at Wolves. Before I get to the Tottenham side of it, two things on Wolves that I wanted to mention. The first one being, I don't know if I say this enough, that place secretly, maybe a little quietly for me, is a place that I would like to see a game. I think that that stadium is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that atmosphere there is fantastic. I think the Molyneux quietly is one of my like underrated hotspots in the Premier League.
That is a proper football man take that I love. I really love that.
What's proper? Well, what's PFM about that?
Because you're saying you love a stadium, which is one of the great things about English football. It's got four sides and you can see all different stages of development. The grandstand is about 30, 35 years old when it was done. And then they've done that bit at the end, which is new. I love that. I love that stuff. You know, like Ellen Road is like a hodgepodge of differently redeveloped. And the atmosphere is great.
Yeah.
And it's... It is. Well done. Well done.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And the other thing I wanted to say about Wolves, I'm doing it, JJ. I'm doing it. Gary O'Neill, his hat is in the ring for manager of the season. It's early. It's very early. A lot's going to change. But for what they've done so far this year, where, like we've said, even in their losses, they have been impressive at times. They've now beaten Tottenham. They've beaten Manchester City. They've drawn with Newcastle. They've drawn with Aston Villa. This has been with losing. I mean, first of all, they lost their manager on the eve of the start of the season. Yeah. Then they lost their best player, Mateus Nunes. I don't know how to say it anymore after I got criticized by the pronunciation police from earlier this season, but whatever. You know who I'm talking about. they didn't have Pedro Neto, who's been their best player. He was not available for this one against Tottenham. Consider me impressed with what Wolves are doing. And what an absolutely ridiculously great goal from Pablo Sarabia to equalize. One of the goals, Andrew, of the season so far.
Andrew, it's one of the best goals I've ever seen. The first touch, the second touch in mid-flight. Brilliant. And it's part of me, I know Spurs thought they were home and hosed and they'd done so well and defended stoutly all game, but it's one of those where you're like, somebody needs to track him better, his run from midfield. But it's such a piece of skill. How do you account for that? How do you stop that? Just a brilliant, brilliant goal. It's going to be in the shortlist for goal of the season.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Well, you stop it by not allowing it to get to him in the first place. And like you
the
said,
run, track the run.
Yeah, there's couple guys. Dyer is sort of in no man's land. No, Madison's out, my friend.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't
and will
see
be
this.
For quite some time.
So I didn't see it live. So I watched the replay. And
no, it's kind of
Dyer's.
Dyer's a little bit no man's land. Højbjerg kind of lets him go. I'd say there's kind of a couple guys who you could point to. Sadly, it's the ones who are probably already in the crosshairs of Spurs fans that Tottenham supporters would like the club to have already moved on from.
Yeah.
You know, this was for Tottenham. This was really, they didn't need this. Like they've just had a week. The 4-1 defeat to Chelsea was a gut punch, but a lot of Tottenham fans were okay with it because of the nature of how it went. However, like we said after that, when the dust settles, okay, feel good about this all you want, but Van de Ven, gone. Romero, 3 games, gone. Udogi, suspended for a game, gone. James Maddison, that was the thing. He came off with, okay, we'll see. We don't know when he may not be back until the start of the new year now. I mean, like, in terms of one game and losing so many key pieces, it was a brutal blow that Spurs took. And so I think what it would have meant for them, even if, and look, they played poorly. This was a bad game for 90 minutes until it exploded to life in stoppage time. This was a game that happened and you forget about it. Now we'll remember it forever. But if Tottenham were able to get through this, even if it was ugly, I think it would have been a really important one for them to go to a place that's difficult at the Molyneux and to have snuck away with 3 points. It would have been big. Even if they had just, if the Sarabia goal happened and they got out with even just a point, I think you take it with all the flux that the club are in right now with all of these injuries.
Yeah.
But they did not need to lose that game the way that they did. I mean, that's a morale blow. And we're going to see now, because there's no, the reinforcements ain't coming. Like this is the team for the foreseeable future.
But wasn't this the thing we talked about?
Yeah,
it was the exact
absolutely
thing we talked about. They couldn't absorb any injuries, and we weren't even Mickey van de Ven. We obviously didn't know that much about, or hadn't factored him in that he would be that brilliant. And now he's gone. We did say the Spurs defense we weren't sure about. Like this is.
They were always.
I feel
one
bad
center
for Ange. This can't color people's perceptions of what Spurs have done.
No, and Ange said after the match, he said we ran out of legs at the end. But credit to Wolves, they came at us, scored a couple of good goals. I did not think we were as positive as we could be. The second half was a bit better, but there's a lot of players having their first start, and we were never going to get the same fluency. Maybe that's excuse making. I don't know, but I would say this: I'm not saying all of these players were to blame, but I don't think it's a coincidence that those 2 goals in stoppage time happened with Ben Davies, Eric Dyer, Emerson Royale, Giovanni Lo Celso, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Brian Hill, and Rodrigo, even Bentancur, who I love. All those guys were on the pitch when that happened. Up to this point in the season, those players have largely been either bit parts or haven't played at all. They were all on the field for those 2 goals. So, you know, like, it's a reason for that game. Now, Andrew's going to have to, this is what he has to work with now. Eric Dyer, like he's still there. Højbjerg,
what's the prognosis
still there
on Van de Ven?
I mean, it's going to be, I think they said, I don't know that I saw an exact return date, but I thought it was like March, something like, I mean, it's going to be a long time. It's going to be a long time. And they don't have, you know, they let Davinson Sanchez go. You know, they didn't really have reinforcements at that position. I think Ashley Phillips at some point is probably going to get a look, but Dyer, like, you know, Romero will come back, but this is the squad. And they were thin. And so that's why the talk of title contention, all that stuff, that was all going to disintegrate the second they started to deal with injuries, because there's not depth here. And it's going to be, I think we're going to revert back to asking questions about Tottenham for qualifying for Champions League. I think that's the fact that they could be in that fight is where you were hoping they would be at the start of the season. At the start of the season, you didn't even think they'd be in that. So that's the expectation. I think with all these injuries, it's going to be a battle for them. And Chelsea are going to rise. We'll talk about United. Villa are in the fight. Now, the fact that fifth place may be a Champions League spot will be helpful. But it's going to be hard for them. And, you know, it's interesting too, JJ, because in that quote that I read there from Ange, he talks about that we weren't as positive as we could be. We know this. They had 9 men, and his choice was to remain positive. So certainly a couple of really important injuries is not going to shake his resolve. I wonder how long Spurs fans will be okay with that. I think right now I'll speak for all of us, which is dangerous, but I'll speak for all of us in this moment and say we are okay with it. And we enjoy what we're seeing, although this game was dreck, but I think we understand because of all the key players that were out. And like he said, there's not going to be fluency when you have all these new pieces trying to bed in, pieces that probably didn't fit that he wanted to have moved out anyway, that the club didn't. But, you know, let me make an analogy, JJ, to coach who you always refer to as Coach Old Man and Jim Boeheim with Syracuse. It didn't matter what was happening. Didn't matter how many three-pointers were being made by the opposition. He was not coming out of the 2-3 zone. We're going to play it forever, and that's it, and I don't care. And eventually, like, it was Syracuse's identity, and I think some people were proud of it. We play the 2-3. We're different. That's just what we do. But when a team's hitting 33s against you, you start to ask, can we consider man-to-man? No. Zone. You sure? Yes. He wouldn't entertain it. Right now, Ange Ball is fun. Like, if you're going to lose a certain way, this is a fun way to lose. Like,
but after a while, the losing, you know,
and they, and
it
look,
really
they
hurts the morale.
It does, and they haven't lost much yet. So, like, I don't want to start jumping to those. I don't want to move ahead steps that we're not even at yet. And maybe they won't get to those points. But, like, there will. I know this fan base. I know this fan base too well. And I know that all the love right now, we said this before the season, they'll turn. If they're losing games because they think he's trying to play too open with players who can't do that, the fan base will turn. And I'm going on record right now saying that's wrong. This season should be about him establishing his identity. It was never supposed to be about winning a title. And if this came with getting close to Champions League qualification, then all the better. But this season was about establishing an identity. He should not shake off of that yet. Keep going forward with this. The board will see the players that don't fit. He'll ask for reinforcements in January. I'm good with this still, but I know that not everyone will be. Not everyone will be. So we'll see. Let's see. God, a few other.
There's a gloomy portent from you there, but I think it's accurate.
Yeah. I don't know. These are the like the peaks and valleys that come with a new manager who's doing the complete and total opposite of what the last two managers did. And I think it's a good thing. And this was a bad game. They weren't going to be great every week. Like that's literally impossible, especially when your entire team is injured. Few other ones, JJ, I wanted to mention. Manchester United narrowly getting past Luton Town thanks to a Victor Lindelof goal. Before the match, JJ, I had this brief moment of thinking before that game started, if they lose this, this could be it for him. Now, we'll never know. We'll never know how close that came to being a reality. But I was trying to read the room of how people are feeling about this manager, regardless of how much of it is or is not his fault. The snowball feels like it had started, and Luton, a loss to Luton at home, might have been enough to turn it to a point where he couldn't recover, and they might have just thought, let's end it. But we'll never know. And he does live on for another day.
It is worth noting, Rob Dawson, he posted this article earlier today. So it's after the Luton win. Manchester United bosses are refusing to meet agents if they believe they are trying to pitch clients to replace Erik ten Hag as manager. So
the sharks are circling.
Yeah. Now, what's crazy about their Premier League form, despite a run of 9 defeats in 18 games to start the new campaign, the Dutchman retains the key faith of club officials after finishing third in the Premier League and winning the Carabao Cup last season. Manchester United are currently the form team in the Premier League. I mean, they are. It's ridiculous. It's 12 points from their last 5 Premier League games stretching back to October 7th. But the performances have been so dog. Added to the fact that they've, they've been knocked out of the Carabao Cup and have been facing down the barrel of going out of the Champions League. So that kind of colors your view. And I guess that's kind of kept the Wolves
from the door a little bit for Ten Hag. But I mean, this was not a good performance. Now, I know Luton gave Liverpool a very tricky game last week, and Liverpool were happy to get a point out of it, but this was not convincing at all, again from United, and you're just waiting for performances to get better.
I don't want to give them too much credit because it was Luton at home and they only won it 1-0. However, if we are talking about the performance, like, this was better. I mean, they were threatening. Their finishing was abysmal. That was the problem in this. Now, they were creating chance after
Hoyland
chance.
In particular.
I mean, he had one, JJ, that it almost goes into like the Jerzy Dudek category when he saved Shevchenko in the Champions League final in 05. Hoyland had one where I still don't know how he didn't score, how it was kept out. United had a lot of opportunities in this. Bruno Fernandes had Fernandes had a couple in particular that were good opportunities that he like just kind of uncharacteristically skied over the net several times. So like, I don't know that the result isn't flattering to them given the opposition and given where the game was played, but I don't know that I'm going to put this one into the same category as like the Wolves match from earlier this season where they won, but were not the better team. The Copenhagen match in the Champions League where they won, but weren't the better team. I think that they were definitely the better team. They just had a hard time finishing their chances.
That's fair. I think that's fair. And it's okay to say they're the better team but didn't play well. And I have to recalibrate my expectations of what a Man United team can produce these days. That's another thing. I won't say I'm trapped in 2012 or 2013, but you know, sometimes I watch them and I'm like, how is this the biggest club in the world playing like this? I just can't fathom it. And all that money spent too.
Yeah.
But anyway,
just to circle back before we move off of this to the Ten Hag stuff, and then we'll move on. Can you fire? I mean, I give United credit for basically refusing to entertain anyone who's trying to convince them that they should go with their guy instead of what they currently have. In regards to Ten Hag, can you fire a manager who through his first 50 Premier League games has won 30 of them? The only managers, this is from OptiJoe, the only managers who won more than that in their first 50 games in the Premier League were Mourinho, Conte, Ancelotti, Pep, and Pellegrini. And Pellegrini was basically there for the new, as the City new money was really starting to hit full throttle.
Yeah.
I mean, the names I just read off there are the legends of this league, essentially, and of managing in general. Like, those are the only ones that have won more through their first 50 matches in the Premier League than Ten Hag. Can you fire that guy? And he also has a trophy? I think you got to give him some time.
Okay. I was his biggest supporter when he got the job. I think I was wrong in the kind of football I thought he'd play. He's just said several times now in the last couple of months that he won't be playing 2019 Ajax football, which is kind of what I was hoping for. And I think it's reductive what he is trying to do with them. And I'm not sure it's long-term sustainable or even the way they should try to play. But of course he needs time. He does need time. I also think just need to clear out that entire squad in many areas. Like just how'd they do? Like, I mean, Victor Lindelof.
Hey,
he's still there.
Winning goal.
Winning goal. Exactly.
Good for United. 1-0. I believe they're
pleased
six,
for them.
Six now in the table. Let's see. JJ Everton finally on the right side of some late drama. Idrissa Gueye scores to give the Toffees a 3-2 win, bump them up to 14th in the table. Although I was talking to our friend Doug over the weekend about that.
Oh, what's Doug's?
Well, he was basically saying, like, with all like whatever good stuff's been going on there, he's like, we're still 14th. And I was trying to tell him, I was like, that is true. Oh. And that's not a great place. But I said, that's not the number. Like the number, the points, that's the only number that matters right now. Where you are on the table, let's be honest about them. They're not trying to qualify for Europe. Like, so where you are on the table doesn't really matter. The points are the only thing that matters, especially with the specter of that the unknown of the 12 point deduction. So just stack points. I mean, look, if you stack enough, then you'll move up the table. That will happen on its own, but don't worry about that now. The 3 points are the only thing that matters. If it moved you from 14th to 14th or whatever they were, 15th to 14th, don't worry about that. The points are the, you just need to stack points because you don't know about those, the 12 point deduction, and you're just trying to survive this year, but that's a good win for them.
No, it's a brilliant win and an entertaining game. Palace had Eze back. I thought he was brilliant.
Can we talk about his penalty real quick? You can go back to Everton after that. We talk about penalties and the run-up and how oftentimes we can tell in the run-up if a guy's going to miss. Eze bucked that trend. As I watched his run-up, I said, miss! Like the stutter, the little tiny steps, the second stop. I was just like,
well, it's not technically a stop, Andrew.
I know he still has the forward momentum, but
you're not supposed to stop.
Right. But he kind of did.
I mean, they all kind of do really now,
but like as in that run up, I was just like, no, this is not how you take a penalty. But to his credit, he completely froze Pickford. Pickford
sat
was
him down
to the spot. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so brilliant.
I guess he's the exception to the rule.
Yeah. When he dribbles, man, it's something special.
Yeah. Yeah. But a good quality win for Everton. 3-2.
No, it's big. It's big, and it was I mean, a 3-2 isn't generally a Deutsch performance, but I think the resilience and a win away from home for them at Palace, that's a great result.
Certainly, credit to them. And then one more I wanted to mention: Newcastle. Eddie Howe loses to his former club, Bournemouth, 2-0, and. You know, this one's interesting. So they lose 2-0, didn't play very well. And frustrations are kind of boiling over. So Kieran Trippier had a bit of an argument with a Newcastle supporter where Trippier could be heard shouting at this guy, are the lads not giving everything? How many injuries have we got? And ESPN FC point out Newcastle were already missing 11 players through injury and suspension going into Saturday's game. It then lost Miguel Almiron to what looked like another hamstring problem midway through the first half. I mean, look, the Champions League is what it is. But in the Premier League, look, they just beat Arsenal a week ago. They hadn't lost in the league since September 2nd against Brighton. Maybe there's a couple frustrating draws in there, but for the most part, their form has been pretty solid for over 2 months now. I mean, these Newcastle supporters, yeah, like that's a long trip to Bournemouth. And I understand you're frustrated to see your team after a Champions League loss come back a few days later and lose to a team you think you should be smashing. But come on, people. Like Trippier's right. 11 guys not there, and you just beat Arsenal and you haven't lost in over 2 months. Like, easy.
Yeah. I do think there's the Champions League kind of after hammering PSG and then losing home and away to Dortmund and the draw in AC, you know,
I get
in
it.
Milan.
I understand.
Also, they've become, their expectations have been raised so quickly, so fast.
Yeah.
With the money and with their performances last season. And away fans are often the most kind of agitated, and well, they're often the best fans and the best barometer of a club.
Yeah, yeah.
But this seemed very entitled, I'd put it that way. Yeah. And I thought it was hilarious, to be honest. It's anything, any ill fortune that can befall that club in footballing terms, I will enjoy immensely.
Wow. Wow. You have anything else on the weekend in the Prem? JJ?
I had one more thing. Let me quickly consult my notes, Andrew, because it's one of those where I'm like smugly satisfied about what happened.
Well,
now Brighton drew with Sheffield United, but Simon Adringa scored probably, again, if we're talking about goals of the season, we've had two contenders just this weekend past. A slaloming run through the center and then plays a 1-2 with a Brighton player. I'm not sure who it was, but the Brighton player is falling over and they still manage
to flick it round the corner for him. Brilliant piece of skill, and he scores the goal. Now, look, is anybody tuning in to see Brighton Sheffield United? Probably not, but absolutely.
I mean, Brighton are kind of a ticket item right now.
They're a box office. They're very fun to watch, although they've fallen off in the last few weeks. But a brilliant goal. That was something I noticed. And Liverpool, with a win that leaves them just a point behind Man City as the table shakes out a little bit, and now it's a bit more of a table that you can that's more familiar to us. I'll put it that way. City at the top, Liverpool a point behind, Arsenal level with them, Liverpool heading on goal difference, and then Tottenham bringing up the fourth position with Villa in fifth. But Arsenal as well. I just wonder, I mean, 3-1 in the end, it was a good result over Burnley, but Burnley, you know, five shots on target, left themselves in it, or kept themselves in it for a long time. Arsenal, just six shots on target. I saw the goals, key goals via set piece, and I wonder if Arsenal are still struggling from what we kind of talked about earlier in the season, working the ball, that final third pass. Yeah, I'm beginning to think or to wonder just about Arsenal's attack a little bit more. Now, again, I only saw highlights of this game, but reliance on set pieces is not, it's not great. And two of the goals, the Saliba goal and the Zinchenko goal, although Zinchenko's was a very skillful finish, it did happen through a corner kick as well. So just something to chew on. I couldn't leave this segment without annoying some Arsenal fans.
And we should say, if you're talking about table familiarity, when we do reconvene following the international break, it is City and Liverpool that will kick things off when we return. So
big test of the credentials for Liverpool and this, you know, this reformatted midfield and your Szoboszlais, your McAllisters, you know, your Darwin Nunez to a certain extent as well. Where are they, Andrew? Where will they be against the acid test, which is Manchester City?
Yeah, that'll be at the Etihad on Saturday, November 25th. So something to look forward to when domestic leagues resume. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. NWSL final, MLS playoff. Still a couple other things as well. Still a bunch to do here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, before we dive into some of the stuff that happened in the U.S. over the weekend, circling back to Chelsea and City for a sec. So it has been bothering me for a couple of years now that maybe I've even said it on a past pod where Mark Cucurella, to me, he's one of those guys who he looks like someone. And I know like who it is, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
And you've got it.
And it had been driving me effing crazy for 2 years. And I think I finally got it.
I'm looking at him right now.
Okay.
Hold him up.
Who is it?
When his hair is longer, and I don't know if he's still on the show, but Kyle Mooney of SNL or other comedic ventures.
Oh, I thought it was someone super.
No, I think famous. Kyle Mooney is it for me. I think that is who I've been thinking of.
Oh,
his hair, when his hair is at its longer.
Oh, that's a disappointing one. Oh God, Andrew. No. Hair wise, some in
I think
in the sense that they are both
hair
men, in the oh,
no. Eyes, hair, facial hair, a little.
Oh no, I'm looking at Kyle Mooney, and I really didn't know who that was.
Really?
No. Tukarea has
maybe
a,
you're looking at the wrong picture. I'm sending you.
Tukarea has a longer
picture now.
Face.
No, their face is the same.
I have to put this to the animals because this could go back and forth forever.
Use the picture that I just sent you if you put it to the animals. I think this is the one. If you put their faces side by side, I think that's the one.
Even in that one, I mean, it's more like Kukurea, but no, disappointing. Actually, really disappointing from you. I was excited because you're good at this kind of stuff. And that wasn't it, brother. That is, ooh, really,
well,
really.
You know what? But well, it is for me, all right? It's it for me. I don't need your approval. That's what I think. Okay? Kyle Mooney with when he has long hair.
I mean,
don't worry about it then. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Don't get angry. It's just not a good one. I mean, it's fine to get things wrong. I mean, Kukurea looks more like, actually, I won't do this to myself. Because I instantly thought of it and I'm like, no, I'm wrong. I was going to say, is it from the Spoon Man video? Chris Cornell. But I don't feel
does
it.
Does no. it? No, what?
Chris Cornell, long hair.
No way.
No.
Mine is. Well, Kyle Mooney is better than that one. Come
no.
on.
Oh, I've got a Chris Cornell looks more like Kukurea than Kyle Mooney looks like him. So I win this in the pettiest way possible.
I disagree.
Chris Cornell in the Temple of a Dog video for Hunger Strike is more like Kukurea than Kyle Mooney. This is really petty point scoring for me. There's bound to be someone who can get a better Mark Kukurea lookalike. Let's move on. Come on.
All right. JJ, Gotham FC.
By the way, one. Sorry. Sorry. I want to get it in before we do anything else. I'm going to leak some of the t-shirt merch. I'm going to leak it to Newman. I'm going to leak it to Newman like I'm Operation Deep Throat. Some high-end government. Yeah, actually, that sounds a bit porno. I'm leaking something as a government might do, and my contact is Agent Newman, and so get over to the Reddit and see some of the stuff we're about to give to you very very soon.
Trying to get some buzz going, I see.
Create buzz, yeah. And the animals are like I expect them to devour the merch.
Well, that's the idea. Certainly hope so. Certainly hope so. So we'll have more information on that in the hopefully in the next week to 2 weeks.
I would be hoping in the next week. Now we got to get out there, Andrew, and I can't have you fannying around.
I've sent you everything that I need to send.
You've sent your opinions, yeah, but I have to find middle ground between.
I sent you a promotional copy.
The promotional copy is pretty good. Yeah.
All right. JJ Gotham FC, they do it. They complete their journey from worst to first with a 2-1 win over OL Reign in a highly enjoyable and entertaining NWSL final. OptiJack posted this. Gotham FC's three straight wins in the 2023 NWSL playoffs is the club's first three-match winning streak, regular season and playoffs, since July of 2016. What a time. Are you kidding? What a ridiculous time to break that streak as they do it en route to winning their first title. Now, look, there's a few things to get to in this. It was a thrilling game, but it's I mean, it's silliness to begin anywhere else than what happened in the third minute of this game. It's one of those things that you can't believe what you're seeing. Like when so much hype is placed on one thing, like when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles at the start of the season for the Jets, you're just like, no, that can't be. This whole thing was about him. Now what? For Megan Rapinoe in her final professional appearance in a title game where she perhaps has a chance to look, you can't rewrite the history of missing a penalty at the World Cup, but a little, I mean, like if it got down to that sort of drama at the end of this one and it felt like, who knows how this could have gone for her to potentially, I don't know if I've seen it officially yet, but it appears that she also tore her Achilles, for that to happen right out of the gate. I couldn't, as she was walking off the field, I was thinking, no, this can't be. This is not the way this is supposed to go. Is this real? And I guess in some ways, as tragic and like devastating as that is, that happened to her at the start of this game, it sort of reminds you as to like why sports are so interesting. Cause it's like, there's no script here. Like this is not the ending that people wanted for this career. And so, you know how I sometimes say, JJ, that I have to eat the bad meals to appreciate the good ones. Moments like this remind you that when you do get those happy endings and those like storybook finishes to a career, to a game, whatever, like it's more real in sports than any other form of entertainment out there. Movies, even reality TV shows, they are not reality to the length that sports are. So when you get those moments, this is a reminder, you got to appreciate them, because like Megan Rapinoe's career, this was not the ending that anybody wanted for it. And it was tough to see her go off like that so early in this game. That was really deflating. And it took a little bit to kind of recover almost from that as a viewer.
Yeah. I say every opportunity, but the last two opportunities she's had now to finish her career with some kind of a high or in some fitting way have been taken from her. The penalty obviously was her fault. It was a dreadful penalty. But I mean, this is just cruel.
Yeah.
I don't care what you think of her. And I know that there was people on Saturday night celebrating that. What happened?
That is dark and weird.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll all go, oh, you know, it's nothing to do with her as a player, it's as a person.
Is that even worse? Yeah, no, I, to celebrate I someone's this, torn what, Achilles? Like,
oh, during the World Cup, man, we have some listeners who, for political reasons, do not like her. Have a pretty visceral dislike of her. Yeah.
I mean, look, she has put herself out there in that way, so I think that she probably expects that. Like but to think that there were people out there who saw that and celebrated it, that's weird to me. I don't know. I can't quite.
Yeah,
that's not for me.
Well, I mean, that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
It was disappointing. And to my mind, I wanted to see, well, I know it's her last game, but can she still cut it? That's what I wanted to see.
I mean, she had been playing really well in the lead up to this, in the semifinal especially.
Well, I wanted to see, you know, how much better she could have been from her World Cup cameos, which were not good. So, it was really disappointing. But the game itself kind of just, it's like life, it's like sport. It went on without her and it was pretty good. One of the maddest things about this game, Rose Lavelle could put together her own hype video from this and they lost. She had some moments. She did an around the world where she just went blazed by a few people. She played a reverse backheel pass. I mean, all backheel passes are technically reverse, JJ, but this was special. Like I know she's been injured for, I mean, most of the World Cup and most of this season, really struggled, but it made me think of what Theo Lloyd-Hughes said to us on the pod when I said I was worried about the way the game was developing and has it gone too far away from America that we're catching up with the like of Spain and even Portugal in the way that they play. And he still said he had faith in the players coming through and also technical players. Technically, she's a
Oh my Lord. She genuinely is a joy to watch. She's Macario is out there, I suppose, as well, but she's something special in that side. There's very few can do what she does. And kind of a shame she was on the losing side, but also a credit to Gotham and the performance they put in. Because I really do think Gotham were the better side. Gotham did deserve. Lavelle took her goal really, really well, but I think in generality of the play, I thought Gotham they deserved their win.
For whatever the highlight reel was that Rose Lavelle could put together, and you're right. And you're right to say, like, if we've got 11 more Rose Lavelles on the way up, then yeah, I think the U.S. Women's National Team program are going to be just fine. But that's asking a lot because she's special. But she could put together a highlight reel, and boy, Midge Purse as well. Mm. Her run on the Lynn Williams goal was, I mean, it was extraordinary. Gliding through players, going around, and then the perfect pass to Williams, who just had to tap home in front. What a spectacular goal, and to do it in that moment. And then she sets up, gets a second assist on the corner as well, that Esther finished off. What a year that she's had as she comes over from Spain after winning a World Cup there, then comes to Gotham FC, scores the winning goal for them in the NWSL final. I mean, my God, not a bad year. Not a bad year for Esther.
Can I say one thing about Midge Purse off the field?
Yeah.
They tweeted out a picture of her. It's pretty amazing picture. Gotham put out, and it was they just say always cooking, and it's her on. She's still in her gear, but there is grass marks on her socks, but her socks are pulled up to her thighs, and she's just holding her MVP trophy and the soccer trophy, and in the background there's the glitter falling, and she's got her medal around her neck, and she's just smoking a cigar, and it might be one of the coolest photos you could have after a game. Absolutely, like it's crazy. Yeah, she looks great in it, unbelievable, and a lot of people are just saying legendary image, put it on a shirt, iconic. Yeah, the whole thing.
That's pretty cool. That is very cool. Now, I want to fast forward to the end of this game, because the ending was exhilarating. So Gotham FC are nursing a one-goal lead. It's 2-1. It's deep into stoppage time. And Mandy Haught, the Gotham FC goalkeeper, it's kind of an awkward ball played near her. She runs out to the edge of the box. I don't remember who it was for OL Reign, but there's an OL Reign player sort of bearing down on her, and Haught has a split second decision to make, and she smacks the ball away. And in real time, and then, by the way, she smacks it to Lavelle, who kind of has an open goal to work with. Now, I know it's from some distance and it's not the easiest shot, but she's got an open goal, and she completely misses it. That kind of has gotten lost in the shuffle because of everything that occurred immediately after that. But
yeah,
that was the chance to put her exclamation mark on the hype video, but
sure, Couldn't
quite do it there. So then this gets reviewed, and you can clearly see that Haught has handled this. She smacked the ball away outside of the box. Bang, red card. She's off deep in stoppage time, and Gotham FC are out of subs. And so here comes a midfielder. To finish things out in goal with a free kick from the edge of the 18 about to be taken. It is just like, it is the peak of drama with poor Neely Martin trying to put on the goalkeeper shirt over top of her gloves. So she can't get it on. It's just like, oh my God, this is of all the things to be happening for a title to be decided in this way with a player who's not a goalkeeper now going to play the position as Rose Lavelle is standing over a free kick from 18 yards out. And so with that, JJ, I wanted to ask you a question.
Go on.
Your season is on the line.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the last kick of the ball this year.
Right.
You got a free kick from 18 yards out fairly straight on. We've all seen these kicks a million times. It is outrageously difficult, I believe, to get a ball up and down from that distance. If there was in my opinion, as I was watching it, I know it's hard to tell Rose Lavelle no, but I'm watching it thinking, my God, look at who is in goal right now. There's a high probability that this ball is either going to hit the wall or be skied over everybody. You've got to challenge that goalkeeper. You have to.
Yes.
Whatever you have in your bag of tricks here, whatever you've been saving all season long for some 100%. Design set piece, this is it. This is the moment where you have to do that thing. It's now. And they didn't. And I'm saying this, this is not hindsight. I'm watching them line up and I'm thinking, you can't waste this opportunity. And this is too close in. You've got to do something different here.
So you're saying like do a little peel off the side of the wall,
something.
Do a little Wout Weghorst against Argentina.
Sure. They all have those. Every team has some kind of set piece design. And if you're not going to use it in this moment, then what's the point?
What about if you get someone who's not as kind of dainty, or dainty's not the right word, not as deft. Deft is the word. As deft as Lavelle, more of a battering ram, someone you know can smash it low and hard.
And hope it takes some kind of deflection?
I know the wall is close, but you know the way some people can really whip it low and hard? I think in this scenario, you just need to get it on target. Just get it on target. There's a real good chance she ain't saving it.
And also, I think your best chance of having done that was to do it some sort of design set piece.
I tend to agree with you because, I mean, if not, when are you saving it for?
Right, yeah, this is it. This is it now.
Yeah, do it now. Yeah, good call. Actually, I agree with you, yeah.
But they didn't, and it hit the wall, and that was pretty much it. And in the end, Neely Martin never had to touch the ball or save anything, and that was it. And Gotham FC do go on and win the title. You know, we talked about Megan Rapinoe and this moment eluding her in that way, but credit to Allie Krieger in her final match for as a professional, a long time, a U.S. women's legend. She goes out a champion for Gotham FC. So congrats to her as her career comes to end in glorious fashion. Very cool. Deserves it.
Yep.
So props to Gotham FC. Celebrate that one. That was an awesome run, considering they were just dreadful last season. And even this season, sneaking into the postseason with that final spot and going on this run. Very cool. Great story. And congratulations to them and all their fans. Love it. JJ, closing out here, MLS postseason. There's a bit of a layoff now until the conference semis take place. But we said there'd be goals in the Columbus Crew Atlanta United FC series. And boy, did they deliver. In games 2 and 3, they combined for a total of 12 goals in back-to-back 4-2 games, game 2 going to Atlanta, game 3, the decider going Columbus's way. And the Crew move on after a 4-2 win in that decisive third game. Very exciting, a lot of action, as we knew there would be. One thing on that really important, who was going to score first, Miles Robinson. So he had a bad giveaway. Pretty much assists Darlington Nagbe, kind of passed.
I know, but
right,
I think that's
him.
Unfair. I agree. Yeah, it's a terrible clearance. Our friend Danny Higginbotham was on commentary. He said it was a bad clearance too. Agreed. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a goal.
No, it doesn't. But the ball is passed right to Nagbe in a dangerous spot. You're right. Like, Nagbe has to take what winds up being a really quality shot, but there's not really many defenders around him, and they're immediately in trouble. I don't know. Miles Robinson has had since his injury, he's had some ups and downs. I think it's been a little bit tough for him to get back to the form that he was in consistently before that happened, which is natural, which is something you'd expect. But that was in a really big moment. That was disappointing. And then Columbus,
What about Amundsen's shot? What a rocket!
I mean, unbelievable from that deep. Into the corner, just a great goal. They're just going to be fun to watch. Between Nagbe, Cucho Hernandez is one of the most fun players in this league. Diego Rossi is in great form right now.
I think Diego Rossi is the difference, or was the difference in this game. I thought he was brilliant.
And I, sometimes I feel with MLS games, like this was what, 4-1 after 47 minutes or something like that. You know, yeah. It's crazy. And it seems to me with MLS, try and get ahead. Try and get ahead early. It just feels like it's a race, which all football is obviously a race. You try and score more goals than the other within an allotted period of time. But there is no kind of rest defense. There's no kind of lull period in MLS. It's all like, it's crazy. And then there wasn't another goal after the 50th minute.
Which you never, when that goal, when Silva's goal went in for Atlanta United FC to make it 4-2 in the 50th, you never could have convinced me if you had said, that's it. There won't be, we've seen all the scoring we're going to see. I would have said, no. This is not ending 4-2. I'm stunned that it did. But Columbus managed to hang on. And in the end, it kind of did peter out a little bit. There weren't a ton of great, there were some chances. But Columbus Crew, I think in the end, deserving winners, and they will move on. And so now with all this, the new format and everything, we're pretty much left with chalk, with the one exception of Sporting Kansas City. They were the only lower seeded team to advance out of round one. Go figure, it would be an 8 seed who did that. But it'll be the Houston Dynamo against Sporting Kansas City, the 4 versus the 8, and then Seattle Sounders against LAFC, the 2 versus the 3. Both of those are going to be on November 26th. And then both Eastern Conference matchups, FC Cincinnati and Philly, the 1 versus 4, and then the 2-3, Orlando City and Columbus, both of those are going to be on November 25th.
And just for the casual fan that started watching MLS because Messi joined and he has his Apple subscription, Andrew, what is the format for these games now?
We're now back to what the people like. The single a limb.
Thank God.
So there you go. I mean, look, in the end, so the best of three, I don't like it. I do think, I mean, look, their desired effect with it has nothing to do with the game itself. They needed it because they needed to satisfy like TV rights and like this desire for there to be more playoff games. I think that maybe the byproduct of it was that if they wanted to create a format that generally would favor the higher seed, this would do it. And I think that's a good thing. You kind of weed out maybe a little bit of the fluff in round one, and now we're left with what you would like to think are the 8 best teams. So maybe they've gotten to the good part, but had to go through a little bit of a rough patch that the fans did not want and didn't really like. And like, this is the part of the MLS playoffs that's tough for a lot of people, is like, there's no momentum to the tournament, to this part of the season, because you get this best of three with kind of some weird scheduling where like the Union and Revs went, what, 11 days between games 1 and 2. Now you get an international break where you got to go 2 weeks pretty much between round one and round two. It's just, it's very herky jerky in that way. Like you want this to flow. You want the excitement from one game to lead right into the next. And they're not getting that. And I don't know, maybe it'll start once you get into these games, you'll get that flow maybe. But up to this point, it's hard for them to build that kind of excitement when you seem to have a little bit of this stop-start nature.
I agree. So, I agree.
Yeah. JJ, I got nothing left. I think that's about it.
I got one little thing.
Okay.
One little thing. Something that's tickled my fancy. Masters of the Air.
Oh.
God.
Yeah, I mean, this was pretty much made for us.
I mean, yeah.
I sent you the trailer, right?
Yeah, during World War II, airmen risked their lives with the 100th Bomb Group, a brotherhood forged by courage, loss, and triumph. A little bit of Barry Keoghan in there as well. Oh, boy. Oh, God. It's like Spielberg and Hanks are out there somewhere, and they're just like, what would Andrew and JJ really like?
I mean, this is going to be spectacular.
Well,
now,
we can't give them Band of Brothers again. No, they've watched that. How about Band of Brothers in the Sky?
Is this a miniseries or a movie?
Masters of the Air limited series.
Series.
limited series.
If you told me it was a 40-part series, I might say not enough.
Mini-series, yeah. Oh,
thank God. Thank God. I can't wait. It's going to be spectacular.
Yeah.
Because I've heard about that, but the trailer was only just released. But I've known that this was coming. I didn't know what the release date was.
Yep.
But, oh, man. Yeah. Yep.
Do you know any of these other people that are in it? Austin Butler, Sawyer Spielberg, Lauren McQueen. Lauren McQueen. Well, Lauren's a very attractive lady, but I'm not familiar with her.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking
Callum
now.
Turner,
through this.
Barry Keoghan, Ralph Law, Anthony Boyle, Ben Radcliffe, name it. I can't wait. Oh, I can't wait.
The cast is like 10 pages long. There's a lot of people in this.
I know, but.
No, yeah, it's going to be spectacular. Let's see, JJ, I don't have anything else. I think I'm all done. I would say at this point, we will have another pod. This is, of course, an international break. The U.S. And Trinidad and Tobago, their two legs, Nations League and Copa America qualifying. That takes place Thursday night, 9 o'clock is the first leg for this Nations League matchup for the U.S. and Trinidad. So we'll have a pod later this week. I can't give you the exact day. Probably midday Friday, if I had to guess. I would
say
that.
So you'll have it for your commute.
Yeah, I would say for your evening commute home Friday. So be on the lookout for that. Probably midday on Friday. I look forward to that. Always love a good U.S. post pod. So that should be fun. And stay tuned for that and some more information on the merch, which hopefully we'll have for you info on that later this week, as well as we approach the holiday season. I know people are already thinking about that as a holiday gift. So hope to have that information to you as soon as possible. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.